Today's podcast is brought to you by Howie's new book, Paperboy. To order today, go to HowieCarshow.com and click on store.
Better strap yourself in. It's time for the Howie Car Show.
Some of you complain that I don't take enough of your questions. No comment.
Ha ha ha, Ernie, ha ha.
The problem is, people are always going to compare your first term to Obama's. But I think there are actually a lot of positive similarities. Obama got us out of a recession, you got us out of a pandemic. Obama got Bin Laden, you got OJ.
That wasn't so bad.
What are you talking about? I bombed.
You had some good stuff. The cancer bit.
Live from the Matthews Brothers Studios.
This has been coming since the 1960s. The people that were burning down college campuses, those people are now in the Faculty Senate trying to encourage these students to do the same.
All of it began the first time some of you who know better and are old enough to know better let young people think that they had the right to choose the laws they would obey as long as they were doing it in the name of social protest.
Rump swabs, hacks, and moon bats beware. It's Howie Carr.
844-500-4242, the number here on the Howie Carr Show. I am Aaron Chadbourne, sitting in for Howie. If you don't know me, I'm up at WGAN here in Portland, Maine, where I host Inside Maine. I fill in for the WGAN Morning News, and I also sometimes fill in for Grace. Thrilled to be here filling in for Howie while he is traveling back to Massachusetts. So thanks so much for being with us. You know, Taylor, every time I hear that Colin Jost clip and he says everyone's going to compare your 4 years to Obama's 4 years, I don't know anyone who's comparing those 4 years. Everyone's comparing the 4 years of Trump to the 4 years of Biden, right?
Exactly. And the thing that they love that Biden's been using lately is, were you better off 4 years ago? And obviously, we were going through a pandemic 4 years ago that nobody, well, a select few people knew was coming down the pike, we'll say. But yeah. It's incomparable. It's unfair. And they took that from, you know, Trump was saying, like, in 2022, comparing it to 4 years ago from 2022 to 2018. But they take that out of context, like they do with everything else he says, and they turned it into their own fodder. Did you feel seen, by the way, when Colin Jost was joking about people watching C-SPAN at home on a Saturday night?
I was watching it on CNN, not on C-SPAN. And so, no, I didn't. I thought it was I thought you were going somewhere else.
I didn't pull that cut, but it was basically, I hope they find your body before your cats do.
I don't even know where to find C-SPAN. But I have YouTube TV, so I can watch it anywhere. I'm not always at home when I have it on, but I did want to, because I lived in DC for a while, and it was really funny because I was working in business. I wasn't working in the government. And so nobody in DC kind of knew how to interact with you. Because they'd say, like, oh, like, who do you work for? You'd say the name of your company. And they'd say, well, that's not anyone of stature. Like, you can't get me anything. I was like, yeah, like, we're like, improving business. And they couldn't get it because it's such this weird culture of who you work for. And this, you know, it's this petty, like, social climber, like, situation. And the White House Correspondents' Dinner, they call it the Nerd Prom. It used to have all this glam. And what I thought was so weird is that Grace made the point earlier when we were doing Grace's news that there weren't a lot of A-listers there. And there was a time, I think, during the Obama administration where the A-listers all showed up. But here we are, the end of the Biden years, and they don't want to be seen with him, number one. But you know who didn't get the memo was Karine Jean-Pierre. She was dressed like she was at some red carpet premiere, and it was just in such, I think, contrast to how seriously other people were taking it, because it was like a work dinner or like a benefit to raise money for scholarships. And it was just so awkward. The other cut that we didn't get to, I don't know if we have it, was Colin Jost made the joke about leaving his cocaine at the White House.
No, because,
like, the last time I was in DC, I left my cocaine at the White House. And again, like, it was awkwardness in the room because they've tried to memory hole that one so hard. So we would forget that, you know, we're talking about, again, the end of Colin Jost's thing is like, oh, thank you. Thank you for restoring decency. You're a decent person. This is the White House that's made it permissible, acceptable, the norm. Nothing to see here. Nothing to investigate here, Secret Service, when there's cocaine found at the White House.
By the way, I think this every time when I see Joe Biden dressed up for one of these events. He is probably one of the only people that looks worse in a tux than in a regular business suit. It's like a preview of coming attractions, you know?
They also, there was the thing, Colin Jost made a joke about RFK Jr. being the next Catholic president of the U.S., and Biden got excited. Like, I don't know if he didn't get the joke or he was trying to be sarcastic, but it just looked like this doddering old man who didn't know what he was doing. And to be fair, like, he didn't, right? Like, he didn't, like, and he tried to land all these jokes that were written for him, but I don't think I've ever, and I've watched a lot of these speeches over the years at these White House Correspondent Centers, and I think it's the shortest one ever. I don't know if there's a comparison historically. There are some times that people didn't come. I remember there was one year, I don't know if it was Kevin Nealon that spoke, but Bill Clinton wasn't there, so he brought a cardboard cutout. Trump skipped them all, right? He didn't go to them. But I think this was the shortest by any president because they don't trust him.
Yeah, it was speaking, like an hour and a half.
Well, the dinner seems... was, but Biden's remarks were maybe 2.5 minutes. It was really short. Like, they barely let him get up. And there was other thing they did before, because I wanted to see it. And CNN now does this, like, 5-hour live, like, they make you think like it's going to be on the whole time. And it's really just 10 minutes at the end. But they did this thing where they're presenting awards to some journalists, and the journalists get to come in, shake the president's hand, get their picture with the president. And he was so awkward and weird in the photographs. Like, I really want to see the photographs they got out of it. He didn't smile. He wasn't nice. He made funny faces. It was just cringe. Is cringe still a word? Am I still allowed to say it? Or am I?
You're asking the wrong guy.
Speaking of the wrong guy, I think now is a good time to get to the chump line.
Come on, Howie, pay off those kids' loans. They're living in tents, for sake.
Remember when you didn't want to live in a tent in college, like you wanted a nicer place to be?
Future White House correspondent dinners may all be canceled. Would that it were, Howard. Would that it were.
Not only that, though, they had White House correspondents' dinners when Trump was president before. Like, this is the thing with the hyperbole of how they always like to joke that Trump is going to spell the end of democracy, when really we're seeing the opposite. When you have state-run media and the alignment, that's what's really threatening democracy. Today's Chump Line is brought to you by Local Silver Mint, located in Ware, New Hampshire. Silver Dave will work with you directly. Contact him at localsilvermint.com.
Aaron, it's Howie. While it's great to have a fellow mayor filling in, we have a problem. If you read your contract, the only way you get paid is if you say one nice thing per hour about Deerfield Academy. By my count, you owe Deerfield 3 compliments. Get to work, sonny.
Joke's on you. We don't have a contract.
I bet Biden wishes that President Trump was a 6-year-old, just so he could sniff his hair.
He's not wrong.
Yeah, Christy Noem had to put down a mean dog, but at least she didn't eat it.
A lot of the texters today, that was a theme, is the dogs. Maybe we should just have a new rule that we leave dogs out of politics, whether you're Mitt Romney, Barack Obama, Christy Noem, Ted Kennedy. Like, it doesn't end well for the dog.
I'm all for taking dogs down a peg. They're too high on the totem pole.
In the 80s, it was the drug policy of Nancy Reagan to just say no. Donald Trump, just say no him.
I didn't get that one.
Driving this train, Biden's insane. Crazy Joe Biden has just lost his mind. Trouble ahead, trouble behind. But Donald Trump can fix it. Just give him time.
Wow. That was talent right there. I don't think I could be that creative and also put it to song. I know Grace has been trying to rap some of these things. You should give that to her as an example.
Did you know the song?
No.
Yeah, you're too young.
Paige calling. It's good to hear a real Mainer filling in for a fake Mainer. Portland. By the way, you better watch out for Taylor. We ran that liberal lounge lizard out of Bangor years ago.
Those are the nicest words Paula Paige has ever said to me.
That was your last chump line message. Thank you for calling Howie Carr, you chump.
I will tell you, though, Taylor, every day when I was working for Governor LePage, I would probably be getting in my car about this time, and I would hit the chump line almost every day. So it does bring back good memories hearing Governor LePage on the chump line. Seems appropriate.
Man of habit, I guess. Got you out of the office every day at the same time.
I don't know. Like, it's funny because when you're in state government, like, the government all leaves. And so I was one of the few people who would ever work past five. And so I would just go take stuff and work somewhere else because it was just awkward being in, like, the empty building. But, you know, Governor LePage, he was very much you keep to your schedule, you manage your time. There would be lights on in some of the state offices late at night. And he would say, if you're still there that late, you're mismanaging. Like, I want good managers who can get the work done in a work day. And if you can't, there's something wrong. And he was a great manager and a really great guy. I do say, though, I do get nervous anytime we combine the words Paul LePage and voicemail. Maybe it's just a matter of habit, but that was certainly an episode from my past. But great chump line. Thank you to all the listeners. 844-500-4242, the number here on the Howie Carr Show. We'll take more of your calls when we come back. I'm Aaron Chadbourne, and this is the Howie Carr Show.
Howie will be right back after this short break. You're listening to the Howie Carr Show.
We're back on the Howie Carr Show, 844-500-4242, the number if you would like to join the conversation. We were talking about Vivek earlier. Have you seen him much on the campaign trail?
No, like
At the beginning, I think he was really after it because I think he was trying to kind of jockey for Trump's favor. Do you think he figured out that he wasn't really in the running for anything good? So,
well, there hasn't really been much of a campaign trail to go on.
I would like to see Vivek in the courtroom. That would be fun. To give the sketch artist like some practice. You know, just like maybe that's it. Like there's no real that's the whole thing. That's the whole campaign is just in front of the courtroom, on the steps, outside the trial. But Vivek, the thing I expected to see a little bit more of him as a surrogate. I know DeSantis now trying to be a surrogate, come into the fold, maybe. Like there was a meeting between Trump and DeSantis in Miami, lasted several hours, behind closed doors, unlike that famous picture with Mitt Romney.
You think Trump offered him meatballs?
He probably didn't offer them. It just probably came out. They served it.
Meatball sub run?
Open up the cover and see them. Yeah, I wouldn't put it past him. But at least he did it, and he had the respect to do it behind closed doors out of respect for Meatball. And that brings us to today's poll question, which of course is sponsored by Raycon. And it's a good sponsorship just in time for Mother's Day. You can help mom tune out all the noise this Mother's Day with a brand new pair of Raycon Everyday Earbuds. She'll get audio quality she loves at a price that you'll love even more. Right now, get 20% off plus free shipping at buyraycon.com/Howie. Taylor Cormier, what is today's poll question and what are the responses thus far?
Aaron Chadbourne, today's poll question, which you can vote in at HowieCarshow.com, is would you like to see Trump offer DeSantis a position in the Trump administration? Yes, as VP. Yes, as a cabinet member. No, embarrass him with the Mitt Romney 2016 treatment. Or no, but be nice about it.
I don't think he deserves the Mitt Romney treatment. So I say no to that. And I think I agree with a lot of the texters are saying they'd like to see him stay as governor of Florida, finish out his term. So the answer is no. I go with no, but be nice about it.
38% say no, but be nice about it. 35% say yes, keep him as a cabinet member. 25% say VP. 2% say don't. actually embarrass him with the Mitt Romney treatment.
There's a bunch of masochists in every group. And I guess, I know we talked a lot about shooting the dog, so maybe that's what's bringing on. But what's interesting about this poll question, though, too, Taylor, is if you combine several of the categories, I know sometimes we've had like an other category and you don't know what's in the other bucket, so it could have been something else. But if you combine 20, the people said yes as vice president and yes as a cabinet member, that's really the majority. The majority is 60%. 60% would like to see DeSantis end up in Trump's cabinet.
Yeah, I don't see him as a VP. I don't think it's a good spot for him. But cabinet member, maybe. Again, I don't think that's DeSantis's trajectory. I think that's somebody who's a little bit older, a little bit more statesman, that wants a secure job to go out on.
Yeah, someone with all the gravitas of, you know, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg. Someone who's seasoned and older. It was just so bizarre, the choices that Biden made for his cabinet. But if DeSantis were going to be a cabinet member other than vice president, which one would he be good for? Health and Human Services? Attorney General?
Good question.
I don't know.
Maybe AG.
Education? Education, that would drive him wild. Although I think they're talking about Betsy DeVos coming back. But I think that would be an interesting one. I think their minds would explode. But that's also the thing that I experienced with Democrats when I worked in the LePage administration, is anytime you put a Republican in charge of something that they saw as something that was theirs, their policy area, their policy priorities, they would get so offended. How dare you? You have no business here. And elections have consequences. And that's why I think it's important, if you want to see change in any level of government, you have to vote out the people who are in charge and vote in people who will make better decisions.
I actually liked that Trump's cabinet was pretty much a revolving door. Like, he would just fire people at the drop of a hat if he felt they weren't doing the job that he asked them to do. Joe Biden has not gotten rid of anybody. I think the only one that has left was Marty Walsh, right? And that was of his own doing.
He Marty Walsh plus that
job,
that weird communication staffer that had like the inappropriate relationship with the reporter, and Biden like had his back, but then like it got awkward, so he left. And I think it's now
somebody else had his back too.
There was a funny tweet that I retweeted. I think Josh Barrow had tweeted it about how it seemed like Biden was taking just random list of people that he liked and drawing him out of a hat and assigning them to cabinet positions. And I retweeted it. And then one of my college roommates said, oh, well, I think it's better than Trump's approach, which was taking the person that hates the department the most and putting them in charge of it. And I was like, that's actually a great strategy. I love that. Like, that, as a true conservative, the person who's going to do the most to shut down the department, that's who I want leading it. We're low on time, but let's grab the phone lines and talk to Mike. Mike, you're on Howie Carr Show.
Hey, good afternoon. I think DeSantis ought to follow the Reagan model, and I don't compare him to Reagan, but he should take the next 4 years off, you know, after his governorship is done, and go around and make public appearances, make speeches to civic associations, Republican committees, stuff like that. Really, you know, nail down his positions, get him wired, and get used to talking to the public. And I think that would get him a long way. Because everybody wanted DeSantis a couple of years ago. Now everybody's throwing him to the wayside. So I think he just needs to kind of rebuild himself and take the 4 years, not get involved in the Trump presidency, and, you know, get himself positioned for the next go-round.
It's certainly an approach. Thanks for the suggestion, Mike. You know who else did that, though, was Nikki Haley. That was her approach. She left the Trump administration to take some time off, to give some speeches, to make some money, to practice talking to people. And it didn't really seem to cement her positions, right? She flipped on everything. She flipped on whether or not she was going to challenge Trump. She flipped on so many things and became the anti-Trump candidate. Didn't end well for her. We'll be right back on the Howie Carr Show. I am Aaron Chadbourne.
Looking to give a mom in your life the gift of peace and quiet this Mother's Day? Maybe you can't help mom run away from all her responsibilities, but at least you can help her tune them out with a brand new pair of Raycon earbuds. Raycon's everyday earbuds are the perfect way to tune out all the noise around you and tune in to something great. Their audio quality rivals all the big audio brands you know and love, at a price you'll love even more. With custom gel tips for a comfortable in-ear fit, 8 hours of playtime, and a 32-hour total battery life, Raycons are perfect for all-day listening. Raycon Everyday Earbuds also come with three customizable sound profiles, noise isolation, and awareness mode. Maybe that explains the tens of thousands of five-star reviews. Right now, get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping, when you go to buyraycon.com/Howie. That's 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/Howie. buyraycon.com/Howie.
Live from the Matthews Brothers Studios.
We are back on the Howie Carr Show. I am Aaron Chadbourne filling in for Howie. Howie will be back tomorrow. Special thanks to the Portland Radio Group for letting me broadcast out of our WGAN studios up in Maine. Joining us now is Joshua Filler. He's an attorney. He's got experience in Homeland Security and all legal matters. And with so much still swirling around President Trump in this upcoming election, I thought now would be a good time to check in with Josh. Josh, welcome to the Howie Carr Show.
Afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing well. So I wanted to, now that it's been a few days since the Supreme Court arguments and we've kind of let the dust settle, you've had time to process it. I would just love to get your assessment of what you're expecting the Supreme Court to do as it relates to this question around immunity for the president and how it impacts President Trump and the charges against him.
So I think the court is poised to find that former presidents enjoy what's called qualified immunity from criminal prosecution for their official discretionary acts while in office. Now, that's going to be short of the absolute immunity that Trump was asking for, and it's going to be more than what Jack Smith was arguing for, which was nothing. I think it's going to be akin to the kind of immunity that governors enjoy from civil lawsuits for their official acts. And I think once they make that decision, they'll send the case back to the district court for a determination as to whether or not the immunity applies under these facts, given that Trump was both president and a presidential candidate.
No, I think it's a great point. And I had the same kind of relationship to that question of qualified immunity, having worked for a governor, and a shout out to Patrick Strawbridge, who represented us in several of those matters, and I know has represented President Trump as well, former Thomas clerk. But Josh, some people think that part of what the Supreme Court might do in sending some of the questions back down to be decided by appeals courts and lower courts is just going to delay it. But can you explain to people why it's important that some of these questions be re-looked at and evaluated by the lower courts?
Sure. I mean, first of all, immunity is a threshold question in any litigation. The point of immunity is to stop the litigation in its tracks. It's not to be vindicated after the fact. So the court's finding of immunity, it's not going to find immunity and it's then go forward and determine whether the facts meet the immunity or not. They're going to want the lower courts to investigate more thoroughly. And then that's going to take time. And the odds are that that will take up so much time that this case will not go to trial before the election. It's possible if the lower courts put the afterburners on. But even if they do, the odds that they'll be able to resolve this between now and November is unlikely. Not impossible, but unlikely.
But I think that's the thing here, right, is that the Supreme Court is clarifying kind of when immunity is appropriate and the test that you apply. But it's not their job to then go back and do the lower court's work. That's why we have the lower courts, to do their job, to apply the rule of law to the facts and then move forward.
Well, exactly. And they didn't do that in this case because they determined at the outset that there was no immunity. Now, the Supreme Court hasn't ruled yet. We're all assuming we're going to get either a 5-4, maybe a 6-3 decision. I think it's going to turn on Roberts and Barrett. I think one or both of them could end up being in the majority with the other four. They did not look into the facts of the case to make a determination as to whether the immunity they have yet to rule on applies. So it's natural for them to send this back to the lower courts. That's almost certainly what they're going to do if they find that immunity exists. Now, if they find that there is no immunity, then this case is going to go to trial over the summer, and there's a very good chance that Trump would be convicted sometime in October.
Yeah, and then we'd have to see how the rest of that plays out on appeal and some of those things. It's a pretty legally heavily day, which I'm glad to talk to a lawyer, Josh. And for those of you who want to hear more about the Karen Reed trial, which kicked off today, we're going to be speaking with Turtle Boy coming up in the 6 o'clock hour. He'll be joining us, Aidan Kearney, to comment on the way that the opening day of that trial is playing out. But Josh, I know you've been paying attention to the first criminal trial of Donald Trump that's playing out in New York. What's your assessment of kind of how that's proceeding so far?
Well, if ever there was a kangaroo court in a show trial, it's the one up in New York. This is a trial in search of a crime that does not exist. What we have found from this case, we have a judge who has actually violated New York State ethics rules for judges by making political contributions, and he actually made that contribution to Joe Biden. It may have been a small amount, but it was nonetheless a violation, and the fact that it was to Joe Biden, I think, is telling. He is allowing the prosecution to make an argument that basically Trump trying to win the 2016 election was a criminal conspiracy, and that he took steps to try to win the election. And in other breaking news, water is wet, but this is where we stand. And Trump will almost certainly be convicted in that case. It's not a foregone conclusion, but he should be prepared for it.
Well, I think it's all but a foregone conclusion, both with the jury that you have there in Manhattan, with the way in which they've set up this prosecution, with a very politicized district attorney who ran saying that he was going to bring a prosecution no matter what. Facts be damned, right? This is where we're after. Just like Letitia James, like, I'm after you, Trump. Like, that's where it was going. And so you have to imagine that it is all but a foregone conclusion that he's convicted. And then we'll have to see how the appeals play out.
Yeah, I mean, Trump will almost certainly be vindicated on appeal if he's convicted. I mean, look, they're trying to make a crime out of non-disclosure agreements signed between parties. They're trying to make a crime or a criminal conspiracy out of catch and kill that they do with stories that the media does all the time. There's no underlying crime here. There just isn't. And no matter how hard they try to push, at the end of the day, there's no way the appellate courts are going to let this stand. The problem is, as you said, you've got a judge, a prosecutor, and a jury that seem determined to simply get Trump, and they probably will. And then the question is, what political implications does a conviction have? That's obviously crossing a line we have never crossed before in the history of our country. And it's going to be hard to say, but I suspect it will have a negative impact in the short run. But I think at the end of the day, between the time of the conviction and the election, it probably won't matter and may even accrue to Trump's benefit.
You're listening to The Howie Carr Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne, filling in for Howie. We're talking to Josh Filler, who's a lawyer, helping us break down some of what's going on in the Trump trials. It's really shocking to me that, you know, I listened to the White House Correspondents' Dinner over the weekend. Against my better judgment, I kept flipping back from Avengers Age of Ultron to the Correspondents' Dinner. And Joe Biden made a joke about the prosecutions of Donald Trump and said, oh, unfortunately, Donald Trump's tied up right now. He's got some stormy weather. It just seems to me, Josh, that it's an incredibly poor taste for the president, the sitting president, who's seemingly directing the Department of Justice, if not directly, then certainly through winks and nods. And they interpret that they're doing his bidding by prosecuting his chief political rival. Do you think it's at all like a troubling precedent for the United States of America, which has not historically been a banana republic, to see the sitting president actually send people after his political rival and then make jokes about it with the press?
Yeah, well, this is why the immunity case before the Supreme Court is so important and why I think they will find at least qualified immunity. This is an attempt to put the Pandora's box down and to close it, because the Democrats have crossed this line in the roughly 240 years of our history. No former president has ever been prosecuted for their official prior acts. And yet the Democrats have come at Trump not once, not twice, but three or four times in order to take him down. There's nothing funny about it. It's an incredibly dangerous precedent, and we're going to have to either unwind ourselves from this precedent, or we're going to have to continue it, in which case we start prosecuting Democrats when they leave office.
Yeah, no, I think that's certainly the path that we're headed down. We're short on time, Josh, but given your background, you were in the first ever Department of Homeland Security. You've advised multiple Homeland Security secretaries. Now that we've seen the failed kind of impeachment, well, he was impeached, but then it was really quickly dispensed with of the current Homeland Security Secretary, Alejandro Mayorkas. What do you think the legacy of that impeachment will be? And what do you think the kind of consequences are of both the impeachment and then the way in which Democrats refused to hold that trial?
Yeah, the fact that they refused to hold the trial didn't surprise me. I think it's a terrible precedent. You know, we should have had a hearing. We should have had a chance to see the facts. But the Democrats do not want the public to hear what's going on at the border. They want to shove it under the rug. They have the majority and the votes to do it. I think the next time when they try to impeach a cabinet secretary in the Republican administration and the Republicans control the Senate, they can expect an equal outcome. But I don't think the American people win when the facts are hidden from them.
Josh Filler, thanks for being with us here on the Howie Carr Show. Appreciate your analysis.
You got it.
You are listening to the Howie Carr Show. When we come back, we'll take your calls, 844-500-4242. I'm Aaron Chadbourne. This is the Howie Carr Show.
Listen to the Howie Carr Show from anywhere.
Egads, what sorcery is this?
Go to howiecarshow.com and click listen to start streaming Howie live in crystal clear high definition.
I'm whispering right in your ear. Buzz, 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 buzz.
Howie Carr is back.
Everything feels strange now. By a lot of measures, President Biden is having a very successful first term, but people don't seem to realize it. Like with the economy, the vibes are bad, but the numbers say it's strong. The economy is kind of like you on the steps of Air Force One. It feels like it's stumbling, but there is somehow upward progress.
Do you think, Taylor, they're going to start having people walk up the stairs surrounding him like they do out to the helicopter? Is that going to be their new strategy?
I don't I think that would trip him up even more.
I mean, they did it at Radio City Music Hall. They had him rise into the middle of, you know, like coming up out of the stage. Like, they have all these tricks to try to distract your eyes so you can't see Joe Biden stumbling. But that was, those were the harsh burns
maybe
of Colin Jost.
Start turning the plane around.
They have to have some sort of like funny, like lowering mechanism or like a ramp that like auto like sends him out, let him ride out on like a Roomba.
Like an escalator or a...
Yeah, the Air Force One escalator brought to you by Joe Biden. This is the Howie Carr Show. I am Aaron Chadbourne filling in for Howie today. Howie will be back tomorrow. Since we've been in the middle of talking about a lot of legal stuff, we had Josh Filler on breaking down the Trump trials, the Supreme Court arguments. Coming up at 6 o'clock, we're going to talk to Turtle Boy Aidan Kearney here. First day in the Karen Reed trial, opening arguments, and they've begun presenting the case. So we'll get a breakdown of what's going on there. I did want to get into, did you hear the story out of New York in Monroe County where the district attorney, they were trying to pull her over because she was speeding on her way home? And maybe that's a privilege that you're meant to enjoy as a district attorney, but they didn't see her plates because it was the middle of the night. And so she didn't stop for them. She just kept going all the way home, and she was nasty to the cop that pulled her over. And there's all this really embarrassing body cam footage of her kind of dressing him down. Let's say cut 9.
Hi.
Hi. I'll talk to Jeff.
Okay. Okay, I'm the supervisor worker right now, so...
Okay, sorry. Okay. I didn't want to pull over. I'm felt okay. Hurt. It was just... I figured I'd just pull into my driveway.
Okay, well...
And I called Dennis, and I said, okay, that's me that they're trying to stop.
Okay.
So that's the end of the story.
Okay, but you should know better, right?
I was speeding. I know that.
Okay, so why didn't you just stop like you're supposed to?
Because I didn't feel like stopping on Phillips Road at 5:30.
That's not your choice. You know that.
Made it my choice.
Now you made it a bigger deal than it needed to be.
It's a really bigger deal. And when people start coming, it's a much bigger deal.
Well, you caused that, Sandra.
You caused that, Sandra. I love how she started with the name dropping, like, immediately. I'll talk to Jeff. I called Dennis. I let him know it was me. Like, it's this attitude that people have.
You know who I am?
Above the law, right? That's all it is. And I'm pretty sure if she had stopped for the police officer who had his lights on in the middle of the night, and he explains to her why he's doing it, why he can't just assume. If it's the middle of the night, he can't verify that it's her. And then this is my favorite part. Do we have time? We're going to take cut 11.
All right, ma'am. So I'm issuing you speed in zone, 55 and a 35.
That's fine. I'll take care of it since I'll be prosecuting myself.
Okay. At the end of the day, if you see my lights and sirens behind you, and obviously they're going off, just pull over. We can have a conversation and be on our way. I kept my eye on your vehicle. I'm not going to check my computer to see what plate it is if a vehicle is not stopping for me. I want to keep my eyes on that vehicle for my safety, okay, so I make it home at the end of the day. Okay?
I apologize, but I'm
sorry that you had a bad day,
yeah,
and I'm sorry it went this way, but I do respect what you do. Have a good day, ma'am.
It's so funny. I'll prosecute myself. I'll handle it. I'll prosecute myself, she says. And then she has to offer this like terrible apology. Do you have part one of that?
Last Monday, I failed you and the standards that I hold myself to. And for that, I am so sorry. What I did was wrong. No excuses. I take full responsibility for my actions. I fell short of the values I've held for my entire 33-year career. I didn't treat this officer with the respect that he deserved. Mm. All police officers deserve respect. I am truly and sincerely sorry.
You also didn't stop.
I had just come from work. I was dealing with three homicides that occurred over the weekend. I watched a video where an innocent cab driver was executed, and I was still reeling from a frightening medical concern that my husband received that afternoon. But we all have bad days and stress, and it was wrong for me to take it out on an officer who was simply doing his job.
And it was wrong for you not to stop when the police were trying to pull you over. Instead, you sped off and parked in your own driveway and then dressed him down by name-dropping his superiors. And by the way, she's not going to be prosecuting herself, right? Do you have part two?
Here's what I'm doing to hold myself accountable. First, I already pled guilty to the speeding ticket, and I will willingly pay the fine. Next, I'm referring the entire matter to a district attorney from another county for review and will fully cooperate with that investigation. I'm going to self-report this incident to the grievance committee, and I will cooperate with their investigation. Finally, if one of my assistant district attorneys had acted this way, I would have disciplined them. So I'm disciplining myself. I will take ethics training to remind myself that professionalism matters. I've been humbled by my own stupidity, and I am fully to blame. I will make this right. I ask for your forgiveness.
I don't think there's any making it right. I think when you have to say, I'm going to discipline myself, I'm going to report myself, I'm going to self-report. No, you're done. You had the moment to handle it correctly. Acknowledge that you failed. Move on. I think that's it. Do we have time for a caller, Taylor?
Sure.
All right, let's go to Tom. Tom, you're on the show at the Howie Carr Show.
Yeah. What was the name of that prosecutor and what state were they from?
It's the state of New York. Brace yourself. Her name is Sandra Dooley from Monroe County, New York.
Sandra Dooley. Okay, very good. I'll make a call. But anyway, the reason why I called was that Washington press corps this weekend. I watched that on C-SPAN, and they are unbelievable. I mean, they are probably the most sanctimonious bunch of bum kissers I've ever seen in my life. And I guess you're up in the heartbreak.
Preaching to the choir, Tom. You're listening to the Howie Carr Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne.